Going to read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 6, The Killing of the Demon Putana, text number 42. It doesn't have a purport, but we'll read it anyhow. And then we have text 43. I'll also read 44. So here's Srimad Bhagavatam, text number 42. When the inhabitants of Braj, who had come from distant places, heard the whole story of how Putana had come and then been killed by Krishna, they were certainly astonished. And they offered their blessings to the child for his wonderful deed of killing Putana. Nanda Maharaj, of course, was very much obliged to Vasudeva, who had foreseen the incident, and simply thanked him, thinking how wonderful Vasudeva was. Text 43. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O Maharaj Parikshit, best of the Kurus, Nanda Maharaj was very liberal and simple. He immediately took his son Krishna on his lap, as if Krishna had returned from death, and by formally smelling his son's head, Nanda Maharaj undoubtedly enjoyed transcendental bliss. Purport. Nanda Maharaj could not understand how the inhabitants of his house had allowed Putana to enter the house, nor could he imagine the gravity of the situation. He did not understand that Krishna had wanted to kill Putana, and that his pastimes were performed by Yoga Maya. Nanda Maharaj simply thought that someone had entered his house and created havoc. This was Nanda Maharaj's simplicity. Text 44. Any person who hears with faith and devotion about how Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, killed Putana, and who thus invests his hearing in such childhood pastimes of Krishna, certainly attains attachment for Govinda, the Supreme Original Person. Purport. The incident in which the great witch attempted to kill the child but was killed herself is certainly wonderful. Therefore, this verse uses the word adbhutam, meaning specifically wonderful. Krishna has left us many wonderful narrations about him. Simply by reading these narrations, as they are described in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one gains salvation from this material world and gradually develops attachment and devotion for Govinda, Adi Purusha. Mahavishnu, Vishnu, thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 10th canto, 6th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Killing of the Demon Putana. Mahavishnu, Vishnu, Vidaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane, Namaste Sarasvatam Deve, Gauravani Pracharane, Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskadhyade Siddharane. Just mentioned I have a book out. It's called Hopes This Meets You in Good Health. Two things in these verses. One of them is that in the spiritual world, we also have activities, relationships, attachments, but they're different from those in the material world. And the second thing is that we can associate with Krishna just by hearing about him. Just like in the 35th chapter of the Krishna book, then at the end of the chapter, Srila Prabhupada writes, such activities and pastimes of Krishna, remembered by the gopis during his absence from Vrindavan. So that's what the gopis do. They think about Krishna's pastimes when he's not there. They give us some understanding of how attractive Krishna is, not only to human beings, but to all animate and inanimate objects. In Vrindavan, everyone and everything is attracted to Krishna, including the lakes, the trees, and animals like the deer and the cows. That is a perfect description of Krishna's all-attractiveness. The example of the gopis is very instructive. For those who want to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness, simply by remembering Krishna's transcendental pastimes, one can associate with Krishna. Everyone has a tendency to love someone. That Krishna should be the object of love is the central point of Krishna consciousness. By constantly remembering Krishna's transcendental pastimes, by constantly chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and remembering Krishna's transcendental pastimes, everyone can be fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness and thus make his life sublime and fruitful. So part of our process is that we want to become attached to Krishna, and being attached to Krishna means being attached also to hearing about Krishna. And one becomes attached to hearing about Krishna, then one will be attached to speaking about Krishna. And if one is always attached to remembering, to hearing about Krishna and speaking and serving Krishna, then naturally one will always be engaged in remembering him. And that's called perfect Krishna consciousness. Now, when we become Krishna conscious, it's not that we get two heads or four hands necessarily, immediately. That we remain the same, but there's a difference in activity. Not so much of a difference, because right now, we're not under yoga maya, we're under maha maya. But we take our maha maya pastimes very seriously. Although it's just a dream, but this is a very important dream. It's my important dream. Although we've had unlimited dreams since we've been here in the material world. But we think this dream is something special. This will go down, and even in history, and even Brahmas, successive Brahmas from now, will always recount my heroic deeds in this lifetime. So this is called illusion. Because we're madly in love, we're engaged in a romantic affair right now with our gross and subtle material bodies. We actually believe it's practically, this body is on the level, for in terms of our attachment to this illusion, it's on the same level as the inhabitants' attachments in the spiritual world. The inhabitants of the spiritual worlds, their attachment to Krishna and to his pure devotees. We're equally attached to this gross and subtle material body. Even if it inflicts unlimited pain to us, still we won't leave it. Even though it's not as attractive as Krishna, still, we're very much attracted to it in every way. So this is generally known as illusion. Even we know that we're not, even though we know theoretically that we're not the body, even though we can hear that the body's changing, but we're not changing, but that, for most people, doesn't even slightly slacken their attachment to their gross and subtle body. So that's called love. It's just that we've redirected our love to the wrong thing. But fortunately, if we hear from the right source and we develop the right attitude, then the result will be that gradually we might become a little attached to hearing about Krishna. And proportionally or progressively, as we become attached to hearing about Krishna, then we become attached to Krishna's service, which is manifested in the neophyte stage as Vaidhi Bhakti, regulated devotional service. A sadhaka, he realizes that it's not exactly an option, one of many options, to follow sadhana. It's the only hope to get out of the clutches of the illusory energy, to get out of our successive intense attachments to gross and subtle bodies that we're receiving one after another. Of course, we may think, well, it's not so bad because I have an English passport. And England, at least at one time, had a glorious history. And therefore, I'm part of a glorious history too. Besides that, we have so many wonderful things going on here. There's so much to eat. I have a place to sleep. And unlimited pastimes in the future are going to unfold for me. So it's not so bad. It's all right. There may be a few problems here and there, like old age, disease, and death. But compared to the wonders that living in Britain are, it's insignificant, these things. So this is called illusion. And although we may understand, as I said, that we're actually not part of the material existence, we're spiritual by nature, still, as I said, it doesn't slacken our attachment to this gross and subtle body and to the drama that we think we're going through. Just like the other day, my computer got wet and it doesn't work so well. And I was wondering why the New York Times didn't put it on the headlines. We actually think our existence here is so important that everyone should stop and take note of it. But no one takes note of it except for ourselves. Mostly we're living in our mental conceptions. And not only that, but even after we leave this body, believe it or not, the world will still go on. Even without our contribution. Even so many Brahmas have come and gone, and still everything goes on anyhow. So many Indras, so many Chandras, so many Shivas are coming and going, so many creations are coming and going, and still everything goes on. So to think that we are playing some kind of amazing, important part within material existence right now is just another phase of illusion. But it is an opportunity to hear about Krishna. Although most people will not think this opportunity is very important, matter of fact, people think we're crazy sitting here in class hearing about some cowherd boy who's killing witches who are 26 miles long. Something that they should make a fairy tale from. Or maybe it is a fairy tale. Maybe that's what they're reading, is fairy tales. After all these people, some of them, they wake up in the morning and they're so infantile, they don't know how to put on clothes. So they wear their bed sheet during the day. So maybe they like to hear about, they come together as feeble-minded as they are, and they read fairy tales. And they say it's something spiritual. They talk about God, that he kills witches. And the witches turn out to be 26 miles long, and no one really takes very much note. They still think he's just an ordinary child. Now, just imagine some witch coming, and someone kills the witch somehow or another, and it's 26 miles long. Probably reached the highway from here. maybe the airport, halfway to the airport. And no one even notices it. Your father comes home. You just killed a witch. It's 26 miles long. And the father says, hey, what did my kid do today? Oh, he just killed a witch. It's 26 miles long. Anything else? Not very important. So this is the nature. We think, well, either this is just a fairy tale or there's something missing here. Why is Nanda Maharaj, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, Krishna kills not only Putana, Trinavarta, Agasura, and yet they're just treating him like an ordinary child? Because that's the nature of illusion. That's the nature of spiritual illusion. And Krishna likes that, and the devotees like that too. When Sridham defeated Krishna, actually it was Subal. Subal defeated, his party defeated Krishna in a wrestling match. So Krishna was obliged to carry Subal. But Subal's friends came up to him and said, you can't carry Krishna. He's the Supreme Personality of God. You can't allow Krishna to carry you. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's a big offense if you allow him to carry you. Subal said, no, that's how the game goes. He loses. He's supposed to carry me. He may be God, whatever he is. He's supposed to carry me. He's just one of the boys here in Vrindavan. As far as he may be God, it's all right, but he's just another coward boy. He said, no, you can't do that. It's a big offense. If you do that, we won't play with you anymore. So the inhabitants of Vrindavan especially, they can't conceive of treating Krishna as something other than their normal relationship. It doesn't matter who he might be. It's not important. Just like it doesn't matter what this body is, what it's going through, we're going to serve it to the last breath. Till it kicks us out, we're going to serve it to the last breath in a certain way. Even if it kicks us out, we might still try and come back in. So faithful we are. So similarly, the liberated souls have a certain relationship, not with the material body, but with Krishna. And no matter what happens, that relationship is maintained, ultimately. So, Subal allowed Krishna to carry him. Krishna carried him around Vrindavan. He got off Krishna's shoulders, and the coward boys wouldn't even speak to him. Wouldn't play with him, wouldn't speak with Subal. So Subal was sitting on a rock, lamenting. And Krishna came up and said, what's wrong? He said, well, the coward boys won't play with me because you carried me on your shoulder. So Krishna said, well, I really like carrying you on my shoulder. That I felt you were just like a lotus flower on my shoulder. He said, I'm not disturbed with you at all. Actually, I'm very happy that I carried you on my shoulder. In any case, Krishna talked to Subal, telling him how much he appreciated his relationship with Subal. Eventually, they embraced each other. And when all the coward boys saw Krishna's attitude, then they changed their attitude and invited Subal back to play with them. So ultimately, everyone has a relationship with Krishna, and that's fixed eternally. And in that relationship, we have a normal way of acting. And nothing will change that. Even, just like for instance, whatever this body goes through, our relationship with it more or less stays the same as long as we're absorbed in illusion. Similarly, when we become liberated, whatever our relation with Krishna is, that will also remain the same. Even though Krishna may perform amazing activities, at least in Vrindavan, they don't take it very seriously. And in Vaikuntha, they just take it as the way Krishna is supposed to be. And here it mentions also that we can associate with Krishna simply by hearing about him. People are trying to get that same association by watching movies or reading books, whatever, but it's not the same. But hearing about Krishna means to actually be with Krishna. And to be with Krishna means, as it says in the Krishna book, to evolve to the spiritual platform. Just like when we put an iron in fire, it becomes hotter and hotter and hotter, and eventually becomes like fire. Now, we may not notice it, and if we don't notice it, it means that we're not really concentrating very much on the sounds about Krishna. Of course, that's normal for a conditioned soul because we don't know how to concentrate. Covered by the illusory energy, we don't have the intelligence to know to actually how to listen. That's great advancement to understand that the name of Krishna and Krishna himself are non-different. Now it seems so easy to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. But we don't necessarily feel any different than when we don't chant. Of course, for those who regularly chant 16 rounds a day, they may get used to it and get used to a certain purity of chanting, and that more or less keeps one on a level of spiritual survival, we could say. But we don't make much progress beyond that. Of course, for those who are not so serious, they chant for some time, and then because they have some alternative reason for chanting, they're praying, they're hoping for something. After some time, then they give up the chanting, or they get the object of that they were looking for, and they think there's no reason to chant anymore. I got what I wanted. Thank you, Krishna. I'll come back in Janmasthami and see what else you have to offer. There's like one devotee in Los Angeles, it was around 1975. Shishi Radhika Kulananda Kijai, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Kijai, Shri Panchatattva Kijai, Shishi Gauranitai Kijai. He inherited $25 million. At that time, it was even more money than it is now. And he went home to collect it and then sent back all his dhotis and all his books with a little message saying, I won't need these things now. Krishna is very kind. So we may chant on that level because we don't really have very much faith that Krishna and his name are non-different, or that I could actually get access to associating with Krishna just by chanting his name. Therefore, we don't make a big effort to improve our chanting. As a matter of fact, sometimes we think that the chanting is just background music for other things. But Prabhupada has given us instruction that we, for instance, we should try to chant just like a child calling for its mother, which means we should actually pay attention. We should listen to ourselves chanting and then see, how am I chanting? Is it schnick, schnick, ram, ram, day, 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 hey, kitty, kitty, hey, kitty, kitty, something like that. And my highest happiness from chanting is to watch my counterbeats go down. I feel progressively more enthusiastic the less rounds I have to chant. And however we get them done, it's all fair play. Or am I actually listening to how I'm chanting and then trying to chant in such a way as to let myself hear myself chanting more sincerely? unless we can chant sincerely, calling out to Srimati Radharani and Krishna to engage us in their loving service, if we're not even trying to do that, then why is Krishna going to engage us in his loving service? It means that we're really not interested. We have so many other things to worry about. Yes, it's on my list, but it's all the way down there. Loving service to Krishna, yeah, it's somewhere in there. I'll get it done sometime. So we're not, if the only way of getting loving service to Krishna is to ask Krishna for it sincerely, then we should try to listen to ourselves and see if we're actually asking him sincerely. Of course, we may discover that we're not so sincere. Because how can we be sincere when we don't even know what loving service to Krishna is? Why would we ask for something that we're not even aware of what it is? Unless one is actually on the spiritual platform, how can one know what loving service is? And if we don't know what it is, why would we ask for it sincerely? We can ask for it, but it won't be with unlimited anxiety and desire, because that desire has to develop. But it develops by listening, learning to listen to ourselves, chanting, listening to ourselves, or listening to the great authorities to teach us how to chant, what to do in our life, with our life, so that one gradually we can actually increase our desire for loving service to Krishna, which will be manifested in an actual calling out to Srimati Radharani and Krishna to engage in their loving service. So moment to moment, we have an opportunity to do what's necessary in the proper consciousness so that the desire for loving service can gradually be awakened within us. For instance, whatever we do, we can check and see if I'm doing it with care and attention. Or if I'm doing it half carefully, half attentively, but it's good enough because I'm going to get prasadam soon anyhow. No one notices it. I've been doing the service for so many years, no one even notices it. So why should I care? That's why book distribution is very good, because people notice it. If you go out and try and distribute books, then people will notice it. And if they don't notice it, then you better go out with someone who knows how to distribute books. They don't even, just like sometimes I was distributing books in the airport in Los Angeles, the international terminal. And if you go to the international terminal, 80% of the people are from Asia. And what they're experts at, the Japanese, the Chinese, the Koreans, is completely ignoring you. So try that for a while. You go up to someone and say, excuse me, and they just walk by you as if you were a ghost. That's all right for a few times, but if hour after hour people you start wondering, what is my potency? People don't even know I'm here. Maybe I died and I came back in a ghost body. That's the most frustrating thing. But generally speaking, if we go out, people will notice us, and it may be not in such a favorable way, but they'll notice us. And we can understand how we have to make some improvement in that particular activity because we get feedback. They have this something called biofeedback. You get feedback what your state is. So we need feedback. But in the absence of other kind of feedback, we have to read Prabhupada's books, hear from the devotees. I mean, of course, that's why we have association with devotees. as Vaishyasika Prabhu said in his Srimad Bhagavatam class in Mayapur 2 years ago, he said, "I live to be corrected." Not that someone says something very mild about us and we go, "Wow, how can you say that? Who do you think you are, blaspheming a pure devotee? Don't you realize you're going to hell because you told me that, you know, to pick up that piece of paper that I dropped? You think I did something imperfect, you rascal? The fools, they deride me at my descending like in this human form." No, we're supposed to live to be corrected. Either we correct ourselves, which we generally don't do a very good job at, because we're madly in love with whatever we do. We think it's fantastic. Even we do something wrong, we think it's just another phase of rasa, lamenting rasa, adbhuta, wonder rasa. We think everything about this body is adbhuta, wonderful, or ghastly rasa. Even when we're in the bathroom, we're completely happy. Ghastly rasa. We love this body in every rasa that it has. And then we're very reluctant to criticize it. And we become disturbed if anyone else criticizes it in any way, gross or subtly. If they're not in love with our body and our activities, we think they're demons. They deserve whatever they get. So we have to correct our activities if we want to get out of the material consciousness and come to the spiritual platform of consciousness. There has to be something changed. Not that Krishna, Srimati Radharani, take me as I am right now, or don't take me. Take me back to the spiritual world. I'm not changing at all. If you're merciful, then be merciful to who I am now. And if you can't accept me, then who said you're not critical? Why are you trying to change everything? Why can't you love me for who I am? Therefore, part of our hearing process is that we have to hear about how to change. That's why we're listening to the Srimad Bhagavatam Bhagavad Gita, not because we have to, or else we don't eat, or to be a good person, we sit in class, or they might tell some stories and jokes, it might even be interesting. Now the real point is that we have to learn how to change what we're doing. Otherwise, we can't make progress. The second-class devotee, when he hears, he becomes enlivened and enlightened. He becomes enthusiastic to change. Something's different. That is, and what is that different? How to be more consistent in our service, how to be more careful in our service. Even the spiritual world, the inhabitants are making progress. Trying to make progress in that way. Although they're perfect in every detail, but still they're advancing. They're becoming at least more enthusiastic at every moment, more attentive, more enlivened and enlightened. And if we think we're already perfect, all right, it's a gradual process. I'll try and get out of here by the end of Kali Yuga. But there's many Kali Yugas, so I'm not going to worry about it. Oh, we have to become interested in hearing how to associate with Krishna through the process of hearing. How to associate with Krishna through the process of hearing so that we can chant. Chanting also means service. This body is actually just sound vibration. It is vibrating according to our desire. And we desire to serve Krishna, then it manifests itself as service. And the better our service, more consistent our service, then the more we make progress towards actually coming to the spiritual platform. So chanting has to be there too, not only by words, but by activity, by consciousness. And then we'll come to the platform of actual remembrance, which is not just remembering, it's actually becoming conscious of Krishna. That's remembrance. We can remember some form of Krishna and the deity, but that's not the same thing as actually directly associating with Krishna. We actually remember Krishna. Nashto moha smritir ladva tat, or as Krishna says at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. Finally, he asked Arjuna a question. And what question do you think he asked Arjuna? He asked Arjuna, well, you were actually awake during the class I just gave you. Every teacher is always wondering, did you even bother listening? I saw your eyes were closed, you were nodding. Did you hear anything I said? I've just been talking to you for 2 hours. Did I waste my time? So he asked Arjuna, kachede tatsutam partha, tvaya kagrena chetasa, kachede agana samoha, pranatas tad te dhananjaya. Kachede tatsutam partha, have you listened with rapt attention? And is your illusion and ignorance now dispelled? So Arjuna said, nashto moha smrita labdva. Tat prasada maya chuta, stito smi gata sandeha, karishe vachanam tava. Yes, I've actually been listening. How? Krishna says to Arjuna, how do I know you've been listening? Everyone can say they've been listening. Because now my illusion's now been dispelled. How do I know that your illusion is dispelled? My memory has been restored. I actually remember who I am and what's going on here. How do I know? Because I'm going to serve you. I'm going to follow your instructions. And then you can tell. Then you'll see whether I've actually become free from illusion. I woke up again. Because you'll see how consistently and how enthusiastically I serve you. So let's go on with it and fight. Then you'll see. That's the answer to your question. So we have to watch ourselves. The answer to our question is, are we actually waking up? Are we actually our ignorance and illusion being dispelled? Are we actually understanding who we are? We have to all watch ourselves during the day and see what we're doing and not be so kind to ourselves. Oh, no one's watching. No one's criticizing. No one's directing. Even the super soul, Chaturmasya, he's probably sleeping. It's all right, whatever I do. There's always a tomorrow. I'll make improvement tomorrow. But we have to watch ourselves and see what we're doing and see, pray for some opportunity to improve. Even if we don't want to improve, pray for the strength, the desire to improve. Pray for something that will put us forward in Krishna consciousness. Not that the status quo is a great status. Because my status is already so great, I can't imagine any other status. Besides that, I've reached the pinnacle of life. I'm in love with the greatest person, me. So we have to get out of this illusion and we have to pray for it. As Rupa Goswami said, I have no qualification, nor do I have any interest in acquiring any qualifications. I don't even like hearing a chant. I don't like anything, but I'm praying that somehow or another, Krishna, you can help me, despite of all these disqualifications. So we have to pray like that. And part of that, our sincere prayer, is that we're actually interested in listening to the persons who can tell us what to do, who can give us their mercy. And we're not inclined to listen. We're not inclined to inquire how to get that mercy, then we just have to come back. Ashvadidana purusha, dharma syasya parantapa, apropyamam nivartante, mriti samsaravartmani. Those who are not faithful in the path of devotional service, they cannot achieve me, and therefore they come back to repeated birth and death. So it's a heavy price we have to pay for our disinterest in making some improvement in devotional service. Through the process of hearing, chanting, and then the perfectional platform will come. called spontaneous devotional service. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Comments?